I'm delighted to see that almost all the participants here seem to believe in intelligence and even secret intelligence, except for my old colleague, Mr. Morgan, which I was once a member of the ACLU and helped represent him on a case, seems to say that we want to fire that spy in the Kremlin. I don't want to fire him. He's a pretty valuable fellow. And I really think that would be a mistake. But the rest of us seem to agree on the necessity for intelligence and even secret intelligence. And so I think let's not ignore that, but let's pass on to the more debatable questions. The question of proper behavior in covert action. Covert action, of course, has can be brought under our statute. It also was undertaken by presidents over our history for many, many years. In fact, Benjamin Franklin was associated with a covert action program in France designed to move weapons to some embattled colonists out in America from France without committing France to active participation in the effort. I think that would be considered by most of us as in the right frame of reference for covert action, but I just pointed out as saying that we apparently have been doing this for years. We've also made some rather silly covert actions. President Grant sent some people up to Canada to try to entice certain of the provinces there to defect from Canada and join the United States. That was a rather conspicuous failure, but he thought that he had the constitutional ability to do it, and there wasn't much protest about it. The Congress, of course, has faced this problem of whether the United States should conduct covert action. The Congress has known about it. All of our people knew about the Bay of Pigs rather prominently very shortly after it happened. And there were a variety of other ways in which the Congress was kept advised of covert action. Last year, you'll recall, both the House and the Senate were posed the question, should we abolish covert action, in very specific bills put up. And both houses, by 3-1 votes, said no. I'll go with that. There are people who feel that we should do away with it. But I think most Americans feel that it's a necessity to have this kind of a weapon in our national arsenal for use where it is appropriate. Then you get to the question of when is it appropriate and when isn't, and the problem of the plausible denial. The plausible denial was part of the mythology of covert action earlier. It ran into a contradiction with the American Constitution, however, when President Eisenhower was faced with the fact that there was a U-2 down in the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union obviously had shot the U-2 down. We didn't really know that at the time, so we put out a cover story that it was missing, and Mr. Khrushchev in his memoirs points out that he was going to have some fun with us on that and demonstrate to Mr. Gary Powers, the pilot, and so forth. But this then came up to a question of whether President Eisenhower was going to go along with a denial that this was really a weather flight. And President Eisenhower was faced with the problem that if he said such a thing, he would be proved wrong. And if he said such a thing, he would be demonstrated as not running his government. And while Mr. Allen Dulles was available to resign and take the heat if wanted, it was quite obvious that the president couldn't accept that kind of a denial of responsibility. And I think that was the death knell of the concept of plausible denial. I've pointed out to our own employees that that's really not a viable theory anymore, because it does contradict our American constitutional structure and the responsibilities that go up to our senior leadership. The question of lies and cover stories, this came up in my confirmation hearing, among other places, and it came up particularly in a story that Mr. Allen Dulles is quoted as having said that he would lie to anybody but the president. Well, actually, if you look at what Mr. Dulles said in the transcript of the Warren Commission hearings, what he said was he was asked the question of whether he would reveal a certain agent who worked for him and so forth. And he said, well, of course, I wouldn't lie to the president. I wouldn't conceal this from the president. To other people, I wouldn't say what was there. Now, I think there's a distinction between a positive lie and a refusal to comment about things that you don't want to comment about, that you do want to keep secret. And I think this is the distinction that we can make in America of refusing to reveal certain things, but not actively lying in the process. And I have said, and I've tried to stick to this, that I won't say a lie to the American people, and I won't say a lie to the Congress. But I think I do have to have the opportunity of refusing to comment on certain things. Now, the covert action area, of course, I think there are debates about the wisdom or lack of wisdom of various of these operations. There's been a lot of experience. Obviously, as President Kennedy said, our successes are unheralded and our failures are trumpeted. Quite a few of our failures, of our successes, later come out and are somehow put into a context that they seem to be failures. I think the war in Laos is an example. I have always maintained that it was a success. A number of countries were interested in Laos. The North Vietnamese were moving troops in there and trying to take it over. We made an agreement, about 15 nations in Geneva in 1962, that all of us would remove our forces and paramilitary forces from Laos, and that it would be neutral and independent. And in a very few months, the North Vietnamese removed 40 people, and we removed about 1,500. The North Vietnamese left 7,000 there when they removed their 40. They then began to push the people in the hills in Laos around, and President Kennedy was faced with the problem. Was he going to let this happen, or was he going to send the Marines? Well, he didn't want to send the Marines or the Army or anybody else, and he didn't want to just sit and watch it happen. So he asked CIA if it could help, and CIA did help for 10 years. It committed a very large contingent of CIA people into that operation, about 200. Or two or 300 officers. It spent a large amount of money on CIA standards on that operation, in the tens of millions of dollars a year. And at the end of the 10 years, the battle lines were about where they were when we started, although the North Vietnamese commitment had gone from 7,000 to 70,000. I think that was a pretty good story, because at the end of it, we achieved a coalition government and a neutral and independent Laos, and a reassertion by all the parties that they would respect the independence and neutrality of Laos. Now, yesterday, of course, the communist element of that particular coalition, with continued assistance from North Vietnam, threw out the other parts of the agreement, who had their assistance from the United States terminated as a result of that agreement. Now, Laos is a long ways away. You can debate whether it's directly in our national interest at any one time, but I think CIA did the job its government asked it to do. It did it effectively, and it had made a contribution to freedom in that lost part of the world. As for responsiveness to the American people on this sort of thing, one of the things that the Congress did last year was to say that it would insist that any such covert activity be revealed to Congress, indeed, and that we not even have the potential that CIA conduct covert actions without the knowledge of Congress. And in that act, it was provided that any such activities other than intelligence gathering had to be the result of a presidential finding that they were important to the national security, and they had to be reported in a timely fashion to the appropriate committees of the Congress. There are six such appropriate committees. We are in full compliance with that act with respect to any activity that CIA is doing anywhere in the world outside of pure intelligence gathering. I think this does provide a mechanism for deciding as Americans and by the people's representatives in the Congress whether the kind of covert action we actually undertake at any one time is appropriate to our country or whether it's a mistake. And I think that this is a process of joint responsibility for these important questions that we have achieved. I rather hope that these six committees might be reduced a bit by some kind of a consolidation, because it not only takes my time, but I have noticed a rather short period of time going from the time I brief all six committees to the moment in which I read something on the front page of one of the newspapers about that particular covert operation. But I think it is a way for us to conduct these necessary activities in compliance with our Constitution and sharing responsibility between the executive and the people's representatives in the Congress. Thank you.